Welcome to the Fallen State. I am Jesse Lee Peterson. Thank you all so much for being with me. I do appreciate it. And don't forget that you can support the Fallen State by going to thefallenstate.tv/donate and also locals.com to support our work. And I do appreciate it. I have with me Candace Horback. She is a former adult film star and host of the Chatting with Candace podcast. Candace, thank you for coming on. I do appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
It's amazing. So what's important to you?
What's important to me? What's important to me is freedom. It's family, love, contribution, and personal development.
And when you say personal development, what does that mean?
That probably looks different for everyone, but I think it's challenging yourself to be a little bit better every single day. So if it's in the arena of being a better mom or a better wife or a better podcaster, a better person, a better community member, and eventually all of those things kind of holistically rise up together.
Uh-huh. Are you becoming a better person by challenging yourself?
Absolutely.
And how would a person know if they'll be, you know, I know if you're doing a job, you know, you're doing your podcast, for example, the more you put into it, the better it gets. Mm-hmm. How are you becoming a better person by doing those things?
Well, for the podcast, for example?
Or anything that can make, where we can make ourselves better.
Well, I think you have to find areas that make you uncomfortable. And I think in that discomfort is the opportunity for growth. So depending on what you're focusing on, like what is going to be difficult for me as that's going to require me to be a better mother is going to be different than in business. It's going to be different than in my romantic relationship with my husband. So it's finding, I guess, to use parenting as an example, it would be finding areas where you tend to react instead of respond. And I think that's so many people. And you could have something that's like so simple. Like today, my son took a giant water and dumped it into my salad bowl. Like I just got it, just opened it. I was starving. And it's like in that moment, you could choose to scream at him and just he's not going to understand really what he did because he's four, right?
Right?
It's all kind of an experiment. Or you can center yourself and say, well, this is a teachable moment and I can teach him like how I feel in this moment. And then he can now learn empathy and consequence and all of that. And I think there's a way to do everything from a higher place that's not so reactive, that's just more well-intentioned and more in alignment.
Nice. I don't see that we're becoming better as a people and as a country, but especially as a people. I noticed that the races are more divided than ever before. Crime out of control. The lack of trust between human beings, government gone wild, the education system is screwed up, and the economy is bad. I don't see that we're getting better. What am I missing?
Well, I guess part of it, I feel, especially when it comes to racial tension, I think that a lot of that it's intentionally manipulated. Whether it's on social media, whether it's on, I guess you can say mainstream news, but even that's kind of dying. But I was just in Austin and I was there for a comedy show and then we were bouncing around from like bar to bar. And I mean, there's all sorts of people in every room and everyone's getting along and you've got like black cowboys and white hipsters and it's really a cool place. And I mean, even in North Carolina, I don't see what I see online. Like I don't see all of the divisiveness. So I do think it exists in pockets, but I don't think it's as widespread as they want us to believe, because by doing that, you're introducing fear.
Yeah.
And then it's like, if I see someone that looks different than me, then you want me to be scared of them. And then that creates more divide, more attention. And then I'm not focused on what you're doing, which is overreaching of power and extension of government. Right. So I wonder how much of that is kind of fabricated with like a dark intention behind it, and how much of it is actually real.
That's a very good point, because I do know that they want to create fear.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you can create fear, you can control the people. Very good point. That's amazing. I want to You seem like such a nice lady. I almost don't want to bring this up, so but I have no choice. You worked as an adult film in the adult film industry at one point. How did you get into that? Why and how long did you do it for?
So I did it from about 2008 is when I started doing like the modeling side of it, and then it very quickly progresses typically.
Right.
So probably about 2008, 2009, and then I got out at 2016, and I was doing like photo shoots at the end of 17. Like 17 was like my last year really working with any mainstream company. As far as like how did I get in and the why, I feel like that's such a complex and like when you ask why you end up anywhere, I feel like it's this constellation. There's all of these little touch points through your life and like parenting and trauma, and then also d weird divine pulls. And that's going to sound kind of crazy to someone, but I felt like that was where I was supposed to be. And it's not like it was all great, but it certainly wasn't all bad either. And when it comes to like
Right.
personal development, it had forced me to learn that you have to evolve or you die, right? Like you can't be this one thing forever. And it makes you kind of work on all of these other aspects and get down to first principles of so many long-held beliefs that some people just think it just is the way it always is. And that's, there's only one way to do anything.
Right.
And yeah, I mean, it forces you to look at your darkest shadows as well. So I think I'm a much better person because of those decisions. But why I got in, I mean, I grew up in the 90s. I think everything that was kind of promoted back then were all of the super babes, and these women seemed like walking goddesses and they had figured something out, right? Like Pamela Anderson had this like captured attention in a way that I'd never seen before. Carmen Electra, Tara Patrick, all of these superstars. And I'm like, well, they've figured something out. My parents split really early. So, I mean, I truly, and I say this, and I think it's probably controversial to probably a lot of people that are still in the industry, but I think if you have a solid relationship with your father, like a really present relationship, and you have a really good, healthy home, the chances of that girl ending up in porn are probably pretty low.
I
You know,
agree.
and I think you have the dad walk out early, that she's now learning men leave and I'm responsible for myself. It was very important for me for a young age to figure out how to be completely independent, like financially, like all my resources. I never wanted to rely on someone else because my examples that were doing that were like chasing guy to guy and we were moving all of the time and it was really unstable. So I was like, well, if I want stability, I have to provide that for myself. And that's a trap too, right? Because we're social creatures and we're supposed to bond, like we're supposed to experience this life together and no one's meant to do it alone. So I think that hardness was definitely necessary for a time, but it's like the what got you here won't get you there mentality. So I
Yeah.
had to learn to kind of shed that if I wanted to get to the next level and have real intimacy with my husband or have healthy relationships and learn that I can surrender and relax and it's not all unsafe and the pressure's not all on me. So it's a really complicated enigma.
Amazing. And so, and one day you're just walking down the road and you decided, you know what, I'm ready to get out of this type of work. I'm getting away from this, and were you able to just walk away from it? But before you answer that, I do remember Pamela Anderson and all those hot chicks. They were hot.
So hot. So hot. And
I
I mean, they
totally
think
remember them.
if like they seemed like they had everybody's love too, you know,
Yeah.
like they had all the love, all the attention, they were powerful, and it's not the whole story. And
Right.
we didn't have social media, so you didn't get to see different angles. You only saw the perfect curated one that they gave you. So I think that also can heavily influence you as well. But yeah, when I decided to get out, I believe in fate. Like, so I believe that God or the universe will kind of give you signs whether you're making decisions that are in alignment or kind of off track a little bit. And I think that those hints get louder and louder the more that you either listen or ignore them. And I felt like I was having just like someone screaming at me that it was time to leave. And for a while, I fought it because there was a lot of fear. It's like, well, what's on the other side of this decision?
Yeah.
Because it's not an easy one. It's very taboo. People kind of want you to stay there. It's like you made this bad choice and they don't really want you to become anything else. It's almost like you have to be punished for that choice that you
That
made
is so
in
true.
perpetuity.
Yeah.
Right. So it's like, well, what can I can't have a normal job. I'll get fired, even though that's totally hypocritical, because are you going to also fire everyone that's consuming this content? Probably not, just the person that made it.
Right.
And then what was all of this for? And then who am I aside from my alter ego? Because I had spent so much time there. And Eva was the one that had all the followers and the likes and was recognized. And that's also intoxicating. And that's really hard to leave. So I feel like it was kind of a slow transition. But that's when I introduced my real name to my fans. And I was like, this is my real name. I'm a real person. I'm so much more than this one thing that I did. And I started by doing a cooking show. So I had a live cooking show on Twitch, and I did that for a while. And I think it was like a really soft transition for a lot of people to just see the real me, like what, you know, brought me happiness and what I was curious about. And then after having my first kid and 2020 kind of being the craziness that it was, I felt a responsibility to use my platforms for something more than just entertainment. So more educational and just trying to raise awareness about issues that I thought were important. So that's kind of what led me to the podcast.
You, while Feminist Fem, did you ever feel like suicidal or like your life was just all at the end, you wanted to give up and that type of stuff?
No, never. And yeah. Again, everyone's journey is like so different. When people talk about porn, it's like this one thing that we think is this atrocious monster. But there's very corporate porn, and then there's very dodgy small companies as well. And there's different types of scenes. Like not every scene is wildly violent or like a weird incestual storyline. Like there's also stuff that you could consider to be like erotica. Like they're not all the same thing. So it's right. When you're talking about porn, like what kind of porn are we talking about?
You mentioned that your father and mother separated when you were young. Did you mm-hmm. ever forgive your mother for running your father off?
I think that they were probably both mutually involved with the demise of that relationship, but it's weird that you word it that way, because as a little girl, it's the love that you don't have is the love that you want. It's yes. the love that you crave. So because my dad left, it was so much easier to punish my mom and say, like, you must have done something, because that was like, in a weird way, you knew you had it. So it was more secure. So I was able to attack it versus yeah. with my dad, I had to look at it with more of this like romanticized view of what he was as a man and as a father. So I'm like, you know, you did this. So yeah, I mean, I think for a long time you blame the parent that has you and not the one that actually left. But I think you have to hold men to a higher standard, right? You have a responsibility and a duty once you bring life into this world. And like the masculine is such a powerful and necessary force. And it's something that a woman can simply not replace.
Yeah. So were you able to forgive both parents? Did you go and forgive them for leaving you like that?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I think you have to. It's if you hold on to anger and resentment, it only does yourself a disservice.
Absolutely. I read that you believe that women are not as sexual as men. Am I right? Yeah. Is that true?
Visually, I would say more of like, I think it women are what
oh,
gets
you said
us.
That women aren't into sex as much as men are. Sorry about that. So you said, according to what I'm told, you said that women want sex as much as men do. Is that true?
Not necessarily in frequency, but I think the idea that women don't want sex for pleasure is outrageous, and that's kind of been debunked. I think where we get confused about that is our systems are so wildly different. So what can get a guy to go from 0 to 100 is much different than what typically a woman requires, right? So men typically have spontaneous desire, which means she's doing the dishes and all of a sudden you're super turned on, where most women require a lot more. Like we yeah. have a lot of context that needs to happen. We need to feel safe and secure within that relationship. So where the discrepancy comes is when women don't feel safe. So if I don't feel safe and secure within this partnership, even if it's a one night stand, it's not going to happen. But if you remove the element of risk, like physical risk, like STD, unwanted pregnancy, physical harm, then all of a sudden you see the women's proclivity to want to have that sex just purely for pleasure go up drastically.
Amazing. I have noticed over years, especially during counseling, that women are not, I know now they act like they are, you know, carry on, but women are not, they don't tend to want sex as often or much as men do, because it's like a woman should just take a hug, a nice hug, laying in bed would be fine for her, but the man wants sex. He just wants sex. And when I see these women today walking around looking all slutty, you know, with their little slut stuff on, and I just see it as an intention grabber or pretense. A woman just want, she tends to just want a man, she can, as you mentioned, she can look up to, she can feel safe with, and have a real life.
Yeah, I think that it's interesting because women's desire is directly related to how desirable they feel. So sometimes when you see a woman in a slutty outfit, it's going to sound crazy to men, but there are times where you do that for yourself because you like how you look, and it sounds narcissistic, but it's not. It's just kind of the female brain when it comes to turn on and desire. So if you are dressing in a way that is slutty, like maybe that's the thing that you need to feel desirable, and that helps you show up in your relationship. Now, that's not to say that that is not still a very powerful tool, and it does have consequences. Like if I'm wearing something that is super slutty, I'm going to draw attention and eyeballs. Yeah. And now I can't get mad for those attention and eyeballs because, again, like everything, like it's almost like this entanglement that happens. So I don't exist in a vacuum. So I don't get to just do that for myself without it also affecting other people. So I think when you're doing something like that, you have to ask yourself, like, why am I choosing to dress this way? What's my intention? And then is this safe? Like, am I doing this in a context that makes sense? Like, it's not to punish women for consequences that, you know, of outfits, because that's like the whole short skirt thing. But you also can't go to the gym with something that's like riding up your crotch and say, why are you looking at me? Yeah. Well, you chose to wear this outfit.
Yeah. I see that a lot at the gym. Women wear those. Even the fat women have those things on.
And the unitards?
Yeah, see those a lot things of those that, now. What is it?
Like the one pieces that are really tight.
Yeah, and go all the way up. Uh-huh. Up everywhere. Yep. And everybody have a big butt. I haven't seen a woman with a small butt in years. It's like,
oh really?
Even the big women, everybody has a big butt. I don't know if those little things make it look that way or is it real. Also, I noticed that a lot of women have those fake butts now that go all the way around. Why are women so insecure?
That's a really good question. Because if you talk to most men, like most men aren't as hard on women as we are on ourselves. Like they find beauty and attraction in so many different things where for some reason we feel that there's only one aesthetic that's worthy of love and attention. And we're trying to constantly compare and then mimic. So I don't know. I don't know if there's something that's happening within like intersex competition in a way. So you see a Kardashian, for example, which is the top of the hierarchy right now as far as being on every magazine and TV show and being idealized as the beauty standard. So then we're trying to mimic it because that is what is getting attention. So we don't understand that other things are also still valuable just because they're not put at the top. I don't know. That's a good question.
I'm wondering if women grew up with their fathers, close to their fathers, would they be as insecure? Because it appears that they're looking for a father's love. And do you think that women would be more or feel secure had they grown up closer to their fathers?
I think both parents play a huge role as far as body image goes and just self-worth. So I think a father teaches his daughter what true unconditional love is and how she's supposed to be treated and respected as a girl and then eventually as a woman. If you take him out of the home, she's not learning that. And then what is filling that gap? You have to ask, like, is it going to be TV? Is it going to be influences at school and friendship dynamics? And then with the mom, I feel like a lot of my, like the boomer moms were raised with, you know, the Special K and the Weight Watchers and Cosmopolitan. And if you have a dimple on you, oh my God, you are obese. And like a really like the opposite of what we're seeing now as far as like body positivity. And then they would pressure their little girls to look a certain way. And I remember as early as like five feeling insecure about my body because my mom's talk, it says there's a saying that your parents' talk becomes your inner dialogue as you grow up. So if you hear your mom all the time saying, I'm so fat, look at this cellulite, I'm not good enough, eventually that her words become your internalized self.
You become like what you hate.
Exactly. So then it's like, okay, well, she's not good enough, so I'm not good enough. So inherently, I'll never be good enough. So then you do all of these things to feel good enough when it's not something that can be supplemented. It's internal. It's like a way of being.
Do you have perfect peace now?
No, certainly not. Definitely not.
You said you were Christian, right?
I'm not Christian, no. I say I'm spiritual, and then I just like wait for everyone to laugh at me because it's like one of those things that people think it means you don't take faith or God seriously, but I think it's quite the opposite.
And why you're not a... Well, first of all, what does it mean to be spiritual? What is that?
I very much believe in God. I believe in... I believe in like being a good person. So when it comes to religious texts, I think there's so much overlap in a lot of them. And I think it's very clear that they're referencing something that seems to be universal. So it's tapping into like, what is good? What is evil? What is self-serving? What is contribution? What matters? I'm not the biggest, most important thing. There is something there's something intelligent and bigger than myself that really matters at scale. And then what can I do to be in alignment with that? And I think it's reading from a lot of spiritual philosophers. Like you can listen to Alan Watts or Ram Dass, even like Christianity. It's not saying like there's not any good in any of it, but I think it becomes a problem when you identify so strictly with one thing because that's not who you are, right? Like you are this spiritual creature having this human experience. So if you're like, I am Christian and this is the only way, that seems a little bit dogmatic to me.
And so is that why you won't say you're a Christian because of that?
Partially, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Really? Were you ever a Christian? Did you ever see yourself as a Christian?
I was raised Catholic.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah. No. Yeah.
And so you're married now.
Yes.
And do you obey your husband?
So yes, I do. So obey, right? The real meaning, it's like this deep surrender and listening. And I think absolutely that's what you should do.
Was it hard to adjust to obey your husband?
Yeah, it's a work in progress.
So you rebel sometimes?
Yeah, for sure. I think, you know, you spend, you know, most of your adult life thinking that the world is one way and that people are one way and that you have this very calcified idea of who you are and the things that are going to make you successful and protect you so importantly.
Right.
And it takes a lot of time to not only undo that, but not to like fall back into it. So I think it's just being cognizant. So when you find yourself where I'm like being combative for no reason or just disagreeable for no reason is to recognize that. Pause and then respond instead of react. So how do I want to show up as my higher self in this interaction instead of just responding from scarcity or abandonment or whatever it is?
And so does he correct you when you're wrong?
Yes, but he gives me a lot of space. So it's not like a harsh correction and where he's calling me out for bad behavior, but he'll kind of give me space and like wait till there's more of an appropriate time to readdress whatever the issue is. And he doesn't just tell me everything is okay, right? Like he doesn't sugarcoat everything or just like allow bad behavior. So he will like stand up for himself or if I'm doing something I shouldn't be doing. Yeah.
So how did you luck out to find a man that you will obey, you're willing to obey, and a man that's willing to correct you when needed to be? How did you end up finding that? Because most women can't find that.
There's this idea that you don't find your perfect partner, it's built. So
what?
You don't find your perfect partner, it's built. Like
meaning
you
what?
Build. Yeah, because the idea, I think, especially if you meet when you're younger, it's to develop together and it's to be honest reflections of the other person. So you can do all of this personal development and spiritual development by yourself. But if you're doing that in a vacuum, it's not really being tested against anything real. So you actually do the most development and see the most changes in relationship, because now I have someone holding me accountable and I can't hide from myself or from my behaviors or my reactions. So I think it's trust is a huge element in that, because it's, I can trust that he has my best intentions and he's going to point out stuff for my benefit. And he can trust that he can say those things without me personally attacking him. So it's creating this healthy space where we can be honest with each other, because if every time he pointed something out, I denied it and I caused a fight, well, eventually I'm creating a liar. I'm making a liar out of an honest man. And I'm saying what I want is a liar instead of an honest man. So you have to, don't punish behavior that you want repeated. If I want him to be an honest man, I have to reward that, no matter if it hurts me or if I'm like the bad guy in that honesty.
Amazing. And so you even took his last name, right?
I did. Yes.
Was that hard to do?
No, I mean, it's, as we kind of went through in the beginning of the podcast, it's very hard to pronounce for almost everybody. It's difficult to spell as well. But
I think you couldn't find a man that has a normal name.
I could have, yeah, but it would have been the wrong man for me.
That's right. But anyway, go ahead.
Oh, yeah, I think it's important. I think it's goes back to the act of surrender, and it's saying this is a union, right? Yeah. Like, I'm giving up the person I was before, and now I'm going to be this other thing, like this more elevated thing with you. And then especially if you're having kids, I think you have to have the same family name.
Yeah. But yeah. So did your girlfriends, friend ladies, did they give you a hard time for taking his name?
No. I don't run in those circles at all. So no, absolutely not.
Oh, no. Yeah. Amazing. So that's amazing. So you kind of changed everything about yourself, huh? You move forward.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. And a lot of it's, again, like, he deserves a ton of credit because he was always so honest with me and always demanded the best out of me. Like, he would never let me be a victim of my circumstances and never throw a pity party, just like always demanded the best out of me.
And he never judged you for the past or anything like that?
Nope.
That's hard for a lot of people to do. Most people love judging mm-hmm. other people.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that amazing? What do you say to women who refuse to change, to drop their name, their last name, and take on the man? What type of advice would you give to them, ladies who refuse to take on their husband's name?
I would ask why the hesitation. And I think some people will go back and say, you know, marriage was viewing women as property, and then the last name was who owned them. But things evolve over time, right? Like, you can define things how you would like to a certain extent. So, like, what does marriage mean to you? And to me, it's a fundamental shift. You can be with someone for a very long time, but it's the minute that you decide to make it legal and have your vows, there is a shift. There's an energetic shift, and you'll feel it the next day, I think, if you're in tune. So yeah. You have to ask, like, why are you so determined to hold on to your old self? Yeah. And like, the idea of you as an individual instead of surrendering to the idea of you both as a couple. Like, it's almost, there's this me and I won't let that go to become a we, and you're not going to have a successful relationship if that's your attitude.
Amazing. Are you concerned at all that as your children get older and, you know, everything's on the internet is always there, that it's going to affect their lives in any way or any of that kind of stuff?
I think as parents, we always worry about everything with our children, right? We want everything to go well for them, but that's just not the case. And I would be a fool to say that it's not going to affect them in any way. Obviously, right. It's going to.
Right.
How it's going to, I would obviously be guessing at this point. I think there's a way to introduce it and to set them up to be strong men, to when this does happen, that they're able to handle it to the best of their abilities. And there's a way for me to just kind of take accountability away from it and then not set them up so like they get jarred and bombarded by someone else, and that would be a failure on my end as a parent. So I would definitely want to be the first person to tell them the truth, because it's not fair for them to like show up one day and just find out of the blue that that doesn't make sense. But I think it comes down to principles and, you know, family first, and we don't tolerate people bullying. Adult content is for adults only. So if you're showing me this as a minor, that's also not okay, right? Like you, like they're not consenting to watch that. That's huge. So there's so many different elements that go into them being able to handle something that's going to be very hard versus them being kind of devoured by it because it's, you know, it's still a taboo.
Amazing.
And now a word from our sponsor.
Give me the shirt. Come on. I ain't killed it alive. Let's go. Come on. One shirt.
Jesse! Jesse!
What in the world going on out here?
All these people are here for the merch, but we're sold out.
They're here for the merch?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
It's amazing. The merch is amazing.
It's amazing. It's amazing.
The merch is amazing.
I noticed that in my country today, America, they allow women to become leaders in government, in schools, and in many cases in their homes. And I know that women were not created to lead. They were created to follow. What do you think about, even in churches they're doing it, what do you think about these women trying to lead when it's not in their nature to lead, but to follow?
I think it's our nature to work together. So even if you look back, like in Roman times, you would have... like the men obviously were the only ones that were allowed to vote, but the reason wasn't because we saw women as incapable or not having any contribution. It was because it was just understood that the union of marriage, that that couple would have their discussions and they would agree together. There wasn't a divide within that relationship. So they worked together to cast that vote or to create that change. What you see now, which I think is so odd, is you'll have a husband that, let's say, is conservative, and then the wife that is wildly liberal.
Yeah.
And now you have two votes and they're going a different way. But it's like, how are you running your house if you don't even agree on principles and values? It blows my mind. I could never be in a relationship like that because you're supposed to move together. So I wouldn't say necessarily it's as much as women aren't supposed to be leaders. I think we're supposed to support each other. And I think that that's what's not happening. And that's what we need to get back to.
I agree about the voting thing, because I've noticed that ever since they gave women the right, so-called white right to vote, everything going to hell in a handbasket.
I was at a party recently and someone was making a really strong case and they're like, women should not vote. It's the end of society.
Yeah.
Very hard line for that person.
Because they're so emotional. And then they want a job, and when they get a job, they want to have a baby. And then when they have the baby, they want the company to pay for a babysitter. They want the company to make sure that the baby get everything it needs. And when they get pregnant, they want 6, 7, 8 months off of work. And then now they want the father of the child to take off work and do all. They just create problems. Am I right?
No, that is a huge problem. It's a huge problem. And we've been fed a lie for such a long time, which is that you can have everything all at once. And it's just not true. You can't have a career and a thriving marriage and be an excellent mom all at the same time. Everything is going to be a trade-off. So if you're working 40, 50, 80 hours a week at the office, there's a cost to that.
Yeah.
Like someone else is raising your kid. And you have to ask yourself, like, what is the best for everyone in this situation? And I think it's a fine line, because you also don't want to be the mom that has nothing else except for your identity as a mother, because you are so much more than that.
Like, and what else are you other than a mother?
I'm a wife. I'm someone who is a curious learner. I'm someone.
But I'm talking about abnormal women. You're normal.
I think it's to not lose yourself in it, because what happens is if you over-identify as a mom and like that's the only thing that you are, what I see is women doing things for recognition. Like you're mothering for recognition and praise and thanks. And if you don't get that, you feel unappreciated and then you get resentment. And then that creates more of a divide between you and your family. And then you see these moms that were posting for Mother's Day and they're like, I have 6 kids and not a single thank you card. Well, you shouldn't be mothering for the thank you card. And right. Of course, I understand like that's gotta feel really terrible, but also there's all these other things that led to that. You didn't just wake up one day and not get a Mother's Day card. So what that's telling me is that you're doing this thing to take and not to give. And you blame your kids for your loss of identity, but that's not their responsibility. There's still time for you to like nurture your soul and your spirit and your creative energy and still be a rock star mom. So you shouldn't be doing it for the things. And I think that that's the trap.
Amazing. I noticed that women don't have love. They don't have love to give. So it's a big issue, a problem for them, because they always, even with their children, they're always trying to get love from the children. They're trying to get, if the kids are closer to the father, they get mad at the kids for being closer to the father. They want the world to rotate around them. Why is it that women don't recognize they don't have love so they can receive love from the husband and the children?
There's this idea in psychology, it's like A love and B love. So A love is what you're describing. It's this very taking kind of energy. And it's like, my cup is at a deficit, so I'm going to steal from other people's cups rather than to fill it yourself. And the idea is if you can get to a place of B love, you have that, you're overflowing naturally,
yeah.
Right? Like I am a good person. I love myself. I'm showing up in the ways that I want to. I'm working on myself. And I'm just so happy to be alive that even when things are going bad, like what a blessing, this mess is. And once you get to that place, you just automatically start to gravitate towards healthy relationships, and people want to give you love because now you're in a place of attraction instead of a place of taking. And I think also with kids, it's the easiest, it's like the lowest bar of entry. So you can take that love because they don't notice it for a while. They'll just give it to you, give it to you, give it to you, instead of focusing on, again, yourself and your marriage. So again, the easiest, like lowest hanging fruit is to take the love from your kids. And then that's how you end up like that mom with 6 kids and no Mother's Day card.
That's right. Should a man ever marry a woman with children already?
If he is honest with himself as to the requirements, yeah, for sure. But it's not for any man.
I don't think it's for any man, period.
You don't think so? What if they're orphaned? What if there's no father?
Leave them in the orphan home.
No way. No, you think that that's better for society at scale?
No, I'm joking about that. But I mean, like, a man meets a woman who already have children, either out of wedlock or been married before and divorced or whatever. Should a man marry a woman in that situation? Situation like that,
you would need so much more context. Like, what's the relationship like with her ex, and is it healthy or is it toxic? Are they co-parenting? Has the other person, have they both moved on romantically? Is there contention there or resentment there, or like honestly, was it just we didn't work out?
But
like,
there's
so many. So sorry, I was gonna say there's so many different dynamics within that relationship, because obviously if one's a mess and it's chaotic, I don't think that that's good for anybody. But if it's a healed relationship, I don't see why not. I think it's, that would be a huge honor to step up.
But I've noticed that children don't like step parents.
Mm-hmm.
They want either their real father or no other man in the picture, or their real mother and no other woman in the picture at all, and it traumatizes the children to bring a step parent into their lives, because most step parents that are doing this, they're being selfish. They're trying to, the man trying to get love from the woman, she trying to get it from him, and the kids go, now they don't have no one around, their real parents at all, to love them and guide them. Have you noticed that kids do not like step parents?
No, absolutely. I 100% agree with everything you said. Yeah, I think you're right. You are stepping into a role that was not yours by design. So I think if you're doing that, it has to be with the highest integrity, and it's to know that this is a package deal. You're not getting just the girl out of it. You're not getting just the guy. Like, they come with their children, and that is so important. Like, those kids are so, like, they went through something awful. Divorce is awful for kids, and you have to have compassion and empathy for that transition. And if they act out, you can't take it personal. But what you see is adults, because they're so insecure, they're getting an insult from a four-year-old, and they're taking that personal and then pushing that four-year-old away. Well, you're an immature person, so you shouldn't be getting married, period, let alone raising someone else's kids. So I think, again, you have to be honest with yourself if you're capable of showing up in that way, because it is, I think it could be a great honor, and I think it's like a super high integrity, but you have to do it from the right place. If you're going in there and you're like, these kids are more of an inconvenience and baggage and they're getting in my way, then, like, do not do that to anyone. That's wrong.
Yeah. Have you noticed that all men and women too, but especially men, hate their mothers?
I hope that's not true. I have two boys.
Well, it seems as though you're waking up to a reality. You obey your husband. You want to do what's right. You're not jealous of the kids and their father. But have you, that's not normal in this situation. Have you noticed that all men hate their mothers?
I think that men have a really, well, that's not true. I know the opposite. Like, I know men that kind of haven't severed that umbilical cord energetically. Like, they're still very much connected to their mom in a way that's probably not beneficial for either of them. So I think I see both. I think it's probably one of the hardest jobs is to be a mom, because you are, like, if you're doing it right, you're doing it so that they can leave you and be okay without you. And that's so hard, because in the beginning years, it is like you can just get drunk on how amazing it is to raise little babies. Like, it is the best thing in the world. And they want you, like, you are a rock star every time you enter a room. Like, all they want to do is be with you 24/7. And then that slowly starts to fade. And like, you slowly start to be less and less significant and less the center of their world and their reality. And I think as a good mom, you have to be okay with taking that back seat and saying, I want you to thrive and be a strong and independent man. And I want you to find the love of your life and put her first. Like, I can't, I'd like, that would be so toxic and selfish for me to say, I'm jealous of your wife or whatever that might be. That's not healthy, and that's not real love. Like, that's something totally different. So I think for a lot of women, they can't make that transition. And then that's what creates the rift in the relationship.
I can't tell you the number of mothers around the world, from the stories I've seen over the last 30 years or so, the number of mothers who are jealous of the men who get married and or even date. And the mother is so jealous that she would try to turn the son into her husband, into her boyfriend, rather than allowing the son to go and create his own family. They try hard to make the son, they'll get rid of the father, make the son their husband. Have you noticed that?
Yes. Yeah, I see that a lot. And I don't know what that is, because maybe you're scared of real intimacy. So you're like kind of latching onto your kid in this really weird parasitic way instead of developing your relationship with your husband. And I think because those beginning years can be so tough, and everyone's exhausted and working, and, you know, the house is always chaotic, it's really hard to find those moments of connection with your significant other. But if you're, the more that you wait and the more time and space that goes, like, the more awkward it's going to be and the less inclined you are to make that connection. So I would say, like, schedule it, at least schedule it minimum once or twice a week. I've talked to so many moms that they haven't gone on a date with their husband in over 2 years. That's not okay.
No.
That's not okay for you. That's not okay for your marriage. And it's not okay for your children. That is not acceptable. Yeah. I don't care if you get a picnic and you go and, you know, you do something for free, but you need to have time by yourself without kids, where all you are is a wife and all you are is a husband. And if you're not doing that, like, it's not good for your family.
So let me understand, because I'm looking at the clock here. Why don't you have perfect peace?
I feel like I have touch points of it where I'll have a moment and I'm so present and I'm like, this is amazing. And I get in my own way. Like for me personally, it's me getting in my own way with should. Should is a big word that I am trying to eliminate from my vocabulary because it's like, well, what does that even mean? And it's like, I should be working or I should be parenting instead of just being, I am where I am, be here now. And I think that's the most important thing. So for me, when I lose moments of peace, it's when I lose presence. So whatever the thing that I'm doing, even if it's washing dishes, you can do that in like in prayer or in meditation and make that washing dishes a very spiritual practice and something that is important. Or you can be like, man, I wish someone else was doing these dishes so I could be playing with my kids or I could be doing a podcast instead of just like appreciating the beauty of the moment. And I think that that's what cost me most of my peace.
Do you still have anger?
Yeah, of course.
Why not just let all anger go?
I don't think you can. I think that trying to control your emotions is a trap, but I think it's what you do with them that's important. So I think even if you are the Dalai Lama, I'm sure he experiences anger, but it's what he does with it. You can see it as an observer and see this car passing by and say, huh, okay, that's what's happening. And then make an active conscious choice of what you're going to use with that. Or you can be consumed by it and then react and get into a fight or make bad decisions or whatever it might be, like over-identify with that emotion.
But we were not created to have anger. Anger is evil. And we were created not to have anger. And it is possible you can absolutely overcome anger, period, and never have to deal with anger again. Because we were not created to have anger.
You don't think that there's ever a place where it's a tool, where it's actually could be, what's the word, like, not righteous, but yeah, like where it serves you in a way. So like if you see something really evil happening, and like let's use kids as an example, because I think that's the easiest thing for like most people with the soul to get on board. Like you see a real evil that's being perpetuated with children, you're going to get angry. And I think that that can be fuel, and it can be fuel to do something good. Whereas like if you see something and you're kind of detached from it, or you don't have an evocative experience, and someone else will take care of it. It must not be that bad. I think that it can also be like a really powerful thing that drives you forward.
But what I've noticed is that there is never, ever, 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 but never, ever, 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 never a reason to be angry, no matter what situations come. And when you're never angry, when there's no anger inside of you, you can deal with all situations in a perfect way. But if you have anger, You're not going to see the situation clearly. You're going to overreact, and you will regret it. But if you didn't have the spirit of anger inside of you, you could see things clearly and never regret it because you see what you're doing. You don't go unconscious.
No, I agree with what you're saying. And I think maybe we're just defining it differently, because I do agree. I think if you... anger can be blinding and it can be reckless and make you make awful decisions. But I think that's when you are identifying with that. So with meditation and like spirituality, it's the idea to become the observer. So it's not to identify with like your human body and your human experiences. Again, like you're something so much more than that. So when you have these feelings, whether it's sadness, jealousy, or anger, it's knowing that that's not yours. And maybe you can even call it like a temporary possession, right? Like it's something is touching you that's not you. And that's what this anger is. And if you are able to separate yourself from it, so I guess you could say that is removing it in a way, then you're able to observe instead of react from that space that's angry.
God said that never trust an angry person, mm-hmm. and that an angry person is evil, and that an angry person is a murderer. And so if that's true, and I believe it to be true, why would human beings believe that they should have anger, period? If it's your murderer, you can't be trusted. There's no love in it at all. Why do human beings believe that they should have anger at all? Since you know it's not of God, it's not of you, it's evil. Why do human beings accept the idea they should have anger?
Well, I think if he's saying an angry person, again, I think that's someone that's identifying with that emotion. Like they haven't gotten to a place of consciousness where they realize that's not them. And then I've never heard that you're not supposed to have anger, because don't we hear a lot about God's wrath? So what is wrath?
God's wrath was discernment. It wasn't anger like human beings' anger. Human anger is evil because it's of their father, the devil. God's wrath was the ability to see what's wrong and deal with it without judging, without being angry. And that's what we should have once we overcome the anger.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think we're in agreement. I think it's something that you should absolutely not take on.
What do you think? So you were a feminist at one time?
Yeah, probably. I would probably go in that camp, yeah.
And you're not a feminist anymore?
No.
What do you think about abortion?
Right now, what's my opinion about abortion?
Yeah, what's your opinion about abortion now?
I think it's absolutely killing a baby. I think anyone that says it's not killing a baby, I don't know what word games we're playing. You're killing a baby. So I think step one is we have to agree on what it is. Where I am on the fence, it's like, if it was a perfect world, we would have a space where like no one even considered it, right? Like, what is creating the situation where these women are considering it? Why? There's something else happening. And I think it's really easy to get stuck on like the legality and the parameters, or when do we cut it off and not cut it off. I think we need to come to a reasonable answer. I think if we say, I'll make it illegal, whoever's running on that, it's never going to win. So you have to be pragmatic in that way. I think if you're going to actually make change, I think the full term, which is legal, and I don't know how many states, I think it's like 5 or 7, is abominable. I don't understand how that's a thing. I think RFK just had a video coming out saying that he was supportive of full-term abortions, which, again, I don't understand, because at that point, it's a baby, right? It will very much survive without the mother. So I don't know what we're doing. Like, that seems evil to me. But I also am team, like, almost no government. Like, I'm like a freedom maximalist. So I don't know. I think that we need to rein it in a lot. And I think that the bigger question that we should be asking is, like, again, what is creating the situation where that women feel they need to do this? And how do we fix it from like a root cause level instead of just like this divisive topic?
So it sounds like you believed at one time abortion was fine.
Yeah.
Because I didn't know what you thought about.
Yeah, I used to think it was totally fine. I've never been on board with full term. Like, that has never been something that I thought was okay. But I always thought, like, you know, until the baby is viable, it's not so much an issue. And then, you know, the government overreach and all of that. And then after having children, you're like, I don't know. Like, I'm kind of convinced that consciousness enters immediately, like your soul enters immediately. Yeah. And I think that that gets really dicey. And I think, again, if you were to make decisions in the highest integral place, it wouldn't be to get rid of the baby.
So you and your husband have 2 sons? It sounds like you say you have 2 sons.
Yes.
So that's cool. Real men make boys first. Isn't that right?
Oh, yeah. Yep, I've heard that. So, boys are the best. They're the best.
That's right. So let me ask, do you believe racism exists?
Yes, yeah.
You do?
Yeah.
Why do you believe that? Where's the proof?
Because I've dated black guys and it was a problem. I've shot black scenes and it's very much a problem for some people. And I don't understand it. I don't get what the big deal is. But if you go into certain threads or comment sections, or I mean, certain people in my family, when I was dating a black guy, it was very much a problem.
So you went black and you were able to go back?
I was. I guess I was the only one that got away.
I say that racism does not exist, and that it's a made-up word in order to divide and conquer, to use people for first personal gain for themselves and not for the people. I know that our battle is a spiritual battle, a warfare between good and evil. And it has nothing to do with color, never has had anything to do with color, but either you're on the side of good or evil. Am I wrong?
I think you're on the side of good or evil, absolutely. And I agree that there's something spiritual happening. But I guess the question is, if you have someone who's like, well, you have been with a black man I will never touch you. That's disgusting. Like, right. Wouldn't you say that's racist?
No, I would say that that's an evil person to think that way.
Okay. Yeah, I agree with that 100%.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I got to ask, did you vote and will you vote this time for the great white hope?
Trump?
Yes.
I have voted for him twice and I plan on voting for him another time. Yes.
How did you know I meant Trump when I said the great white hope?
Well, it's definitely not Biden. And I'm assuming it's probably not RFK.
Right on. So listen, I got to put you on the hot seat.
Oh, boy.
And I need you to answer these questions as quickly as possible.
Okay.
The hot seat.
What is a man?
An adult male with a penis. if we're doing biology, you never know these days, right?
Should we ban all pornography?
No. Freedom maximalist. I think that you have to give people a choice, and I don't want government telling me what to do in my bedroom.
Do we need more white babies?
Yes.
Is the earth flat or round?
Round.
Did Big Mama Michelle Obama eat up all the ribs?
I don't know. Did she gain weight? Is that why you're asking?
Obama said Michelle loved ribs and tamales and things like that. Is Joe Biden the worst president you've ever seen?
Yeah, I think so. I think when you have someone that's playing Weekend at Bernie's for the last 3 years, I don't know how you do worse than that.
If you could go back in time and change anything about you, what would you change?
Ooh, good question. I probably wouldn't have entered mainstream porn, believe it or not.
Should we give the blacks reparations?
No.
Did you know that we celebrate the White History Month in July?
No way.
What?
No.
Yeah.
There's White History Month?
Every July is White History Month.
Oh, because of 4th of July?
No, because July just feels white.
I did not know, no.
Yeah, I started that 6 years ago. And coming this July, if the Lord is willing and the creek don't rise, we're going to be celebrating 7 years of White History Month.
Congratulations.
Yeah. And the reason we do it in July, because July just feels white. It's summertime, vacation time, relaxed time, reflection time. And it's a time to really appreciate our country.
Mm-hmm.
So will you celebrate it with us this year?
Oh, of course, yeah.
Nice.
I feel like I always do like a freedom celebration all of July. Like we're always watching like The Patriot and all those Mel Gibson movies and just get into like America.
Right on. Does a chicken have lips?
No.
Was Jesus white or black?
Brown?
True or false, sending your kid to a public school is child abuse.
Ooh. It's definitely not what's best for the kid.
What is love?
Love. Service.
Have you ever told anyone how the cow ate the cabbage?
I didn't know the cow ate the cabbage.
Did you have fun?
I had a blast.
Amazing. Thank you so much for coming on and taking the hot seat. I do appreciate it. Tell the folks how to find your podcast, your books, whatever it is that you're doing.
So you can find my podcast, Chatting with Candace, anywhere that you get podcasts or chattingwithcandace.com. And the website has all of my links, all my socials, and you can sign up for a newsletter there and I'll keep you posted.
Right on. Thank you so much for being with us, Candace. And thank you all for tuning in. I absolutely appreciate it. Don't forget to go to thefallenstate.com. locals.tv/donate or locals.com and check out our also check out our merch. We'll go to those things to support us, but check out our merch and all those good things. Like, follow, ring the bell, subscribe. Y'all know what to do, right? And let me hear from you. And thank you again for tuning in. I do appreciate it. Thank you, Candace.
Thank you.
Amazing.